Biographies of Great Rabbanim. Today we will discuss some of the Rishonim. And if you'd like to have more details about some of these, whether we're going to talk on this year, please visit us online at EnglishTorahTapes.com, where you can go to a section called Jewish History. And many of the Rishonim that we're going to discuss today is mentioned more in detail under Jewish History. First one we're going to talk about is Rav Shmuel HaNogid. He was born in 993 and died in 1055. From early youth, Rav Shmuel was educated in both religious and secular studies. His master in Talmud was Rav Chanoch ben Moshe, and his teacher in Hebrew grammar was Rav Yehuda ibn Chayyub. Under Arab mentors, he studied sciences, mathematics, calligraphy, Arabian poetry, and languages. Although he had thoroughly mastered all of these fields, Rav Shmuel was quite poor. He owned a small variety store from which he barely earned a living. This, however, did not deter him from studying. In the year 1012, Cordova was torn by civil war, and when the Berber chieftain Salamin was victorious, Rav Shmuel and many other Jews were compelled to emigrate because they had supported Suleiman's rival, Muhammad ibn Hashim. Rav Shmuel found refuge in Malaga, which was under the peaceable rule of the Berber kingdom of Granada. There he maintained a small business while devoting as much time as possible to studies. The following story is related by the Ravid about Rav Shmuel's rise from a small shopkeeper to a position of aristocracy. Rav Shmuel's store was located near the courtyard of Ibn al-Arif, visor to King Khabus of Granada. One day when al-Arif was away, the visor's chambermaid asked Rav Shmuel to compose some letters to her master. Upon reading the letters, al-Arif was highly impressed with the author's wisdom and style of expression. When he came home and learned the identity of the author, the al-Arif immediately engaged Rav Shmuel as his private secretary. The visor was so impressed by his new secretary's talents that he allowed himself to be guided by Rav Shmuel in all affairs of state. When al-Arif became sick and was near death, he was visited by King Khabus, who was openly disturbed by the prospect of losing his trusted advisor. At this time, al-Arif disclosed the identity of the true advisor, and after the visor's death, Rav Shmuel was appointed his successor. It was because of this position that he was called Hanogid, the prince, by the Jews of Granada, and Ibn Nagdela by the Arabs. The Nagid's ascendancy was not universally appreciated. However, the jealousy engendered among the Arab nobility by the appointment of a Jew to such a high post gave rise to a variety of plots and accusations. The king, however, paid no heed to the conspirators, and Rav Shmuel's position remained secured. Despite their attempts to denigrate him in the king's eyes, the Nagid showed great reserve in dealing with his detectors. One popular story about Shmuel's forbearance tells of a stroll on which he accompanied the king through the streets of Granada. An Arab shopkeeper who was a religious fanatic began hurling epithets and sharp curses at Ibn Nagdela. The incident so angered the king that he ordered his visor to have the man's tongue cut out. However, instead of sending armed police to carry out the king's orders, Shmuel sent a gift to the shopkeeper. Some time later, the king and his visor were again strolling past the same shopkeeper's stall. This time, the Arab came out and began showering Rav Shmuel with all sorts of blessings and praise. When the king demanded to know why his orders to cut out the man's tongue had not been obeyed, Rav Shmuel replied, "Your Majesty's command has been fulfilled. I've cut out his evil tongue and replaced it with a good one." Upon the death of King Khabus in the year 1037, a controversy arose among influential parties within the royal court as to which of the king's sons should succeed him. Rav Shmuel sided with a minority party that favored the elder son Badis. When the latter's bid was successful, Rav Shmuel not only retained his previous post, but was entrusted with even more responsibilities, as the pleasure-seeking king paid little attention to affairs of the state. Thus, Rav Shmuel became virtual ruler of Granada. In addition to administering the domestic affairs of the kingdom, Rav Shmuel also served as commander-in-chief of the armies, and personally took part in the Granada's many wars with neighboring states. In Granada, Rav Shmuel established a magnificent shul, which included a Talmudic academy. A proficient Talmudist, he himself delivered the daily lecture and provided for the material needs of the many poor students as well. His huge library included many Talmudic and halachic works, in addition to compendiums on Hebrew grammar, poetry, and philosophy. He also spent enormous sums for copies of books, which he then presented to indignant students. Rav Shmuel carried on a halachic correspondence with Nissen ben Yaakov of Kairouan, who conveyed to him the decisions and Talmudic comments of Rav Hai Gon. Their friendship grew, and eventually they became related when the Nagid's son, Rabbi Shua, married Rabbi Nissen's daughter. The Nagid donated large sums of money for the upkeep of the ancient Babylonian academies of Sur and Papadisa, as well as for the yeshiva in Kairouan and the shuls in Eretz Yisrael. In his hometown of Granada, every poor person turned to the charitable Nagid for assistance. Despite his heavy schedule, Rav Shmuel wrote many important works. Mavo HaTalmud describes the logic and terminology of the Talmud. It is included in most editions of the Talmud following the tractate Brachas. His digest of Talmudic laws, Hilchos HaGevurtah, was designed to teach halacha to the layman. The book which has been lost is quoted by Bala Mor, the Ramban, Sefer Ha'itim, Eshkol, Rav Yitzchok, Ibn Gaius, and others. These quotes have been collected and published as Hilchos HaNogad. It was published in 1962. Recently found fragments of a work by the Nogad suggest that he wrote a treatise containing criticism of the Gaonic commentaries to the Talmud. The Meiri lists Rav Shmuel, Rav Hananel, and Rav Nissim as the patriarchs of the Rabbinic Rishonic era, which followed that of the Gaonim. Rav Shmuel was also an accomplished poet. He separated his poems into three categories. Ben Tehillim's sequel to Psalms is a collection of devotional poems, Ben Mishlei's sequel to Proverbs containing maxims, and Ben Kehela's sequel to Kehelas is a philosophical work. Fragments of these poems first appeared in print in 1879 in St. Petersburg, but the full works were not published until 1934, Oxford. Rav Shmuel also composed grammatical works, none of which are extant. Two of his responses appear in Peor Hador, Amsterdam, 1765, as a father of Shmuel displayed such a great interest in his children's education that he sent them lessons even from the battlefield and corresponded with them concerning their progress. Rav Shmuel was succeeded by his son, Rabbi Yosef, who also assumed the title of HaNogad. He was called Rabbi Yosef ben Shmuel HaNogad. Now we're going to talk about the Rif, Rav Yitzchok Alfasi, who was born in 1013 and died in 1103. Born in a small village in Algeria, Rav Yitzchok moved to the major city of Fez in Morocco. Hence his surname Alfasi and his acronym the Rif, Rav Yitzchok of Fez. There he headed a large yeshiva whose best known student was Rav Ephraim of Kila Hamud. Rif was considered the successor to the famous teachers Rav Nissim ben Yaakov and Rav Hananel. At the age of 75, the Rif was slandered to the government on some unknown charge and was forced to flee to Spain. He spent a short time in Cordova, where he was cordially received. From there he moved to Lacina, a two-century-old stronghold of Torah, which was under the leadership of Rav Yitzchok Ibn Gaius. When Ibn Gaius died just a few months later in 1089, the Rif was chosen as rabbi of Lacina and head of its great Talmudic yeshiva. Among the numerous disciples who attended his discourses was Rav Yosef Ibn Migash. A collection of 320 of the Rif's responses exist, and additional collections of responses have been printed more recently. In 1934 and in 1975, he left his deepest imprint on future generations. However, with his magnum opus Sefer Halachas and the bridge version of the Talmud that deals strictly with halachic applicable discourses and their practical application. The work reviews the vital points of the Talmudic text and provides a clear picture of the halachic conclusion. In it, the Rif excerpts from the Talmud only those passages pertinent to the practical halacha, omitting the lengthy discussions of the Amoraim. His arrangement generally follows that of the Talmud, thus facilitating additional research in the source. However, the Rif also assembles from throughout the Talmud all of the sacred, scattered discourses pertaining to one subject, so that the reader can obtain a broad understanding without searching through all tractates. This type of arrangement was not original to the Rif and already been introduced by the first post-Talmudic halacha text, Halachas Gedolos. The feature which distinguishes the Rif is that his work incorporates most of the body of halacha developed by the Gaonim. As a result, his work suffices for them all. The Rambam preface to his Mishnah commentary, Rif's decisions form the basis for the Rambam's code. The Rambam himself reports that he has deviated from the Rif's view in only approximately 30 instances. When we consider that Rabbi Yosef Karo's Shulchan Aruch is based primarily upon the Rambam's code, we realize how formidable is the Rif's influence on contemporary halacha. In ruling, the Rif usually follows the view of the Babylonian Gaonim. However, in instances where he differs with the Gaonic opinions, the Rif elaborates on the difficulties arising from the explanation, and then offers the Talmudic interpretation on which he bases his original halachic decision. Many times, he quotes at length from the commentary of his mentor, Rav Hananiel, and where he disagrees, presents the arguments that cause him to do so. Confining itself only to halachas applicable to his time, the Sefer Halachas commits all laws governing sacrifices, ritual purity, and agriculture in Israel. The work therefore covers only three of the six orders in the Mishnah, Moed, Noshim, and Zikin, and tractates Barachas and Chulin, laws discussed in orders Kutchim and Taharas, but also applicable today, example Tefillin Mezuzah, were gathered by Rabbi Yitzchok under the title Halachas Ketanis and are printed after Masechta Menachas in most full editions of the Talmud. Many commentators were written on Sefer Halachas, among them Rav Zacharia Halevi Hamor, which disputes the Rif in many decisions, and the Ramban's Milchamos Hashem, written to refute the criticisms Hamor as well as those of the Rivet, number 3. The latter commentators, Rabbi Yonason of Luniel, Duran, and Rabbi Yosef Chaviva, and Mukti Yosef, also wrote commentaries on Sefer Halachas. The Meir refers to the Rif as the greatest of the halachic authorities. The Rambam writes of him that he superseded all his predecessors in his great work, and the Rivet number 3, who was most critical in his evaluation of other authors, states in regard to the Rif, I would adhere to the words of the rabbi even if he were to decide that right was left. The Ashkenazic scholars also lauded him. The Tosfos, the Ri, states it's impossible for a mortal to compose such a work unless the divine presence rests upon him. Rav Yitzchok Alfasi represents a departure from the prototype of the Sephardic scholar as generally known until this time, whereas most, if not all, recognized scholars before him cultivated the study of the Hebrew language and its grammar, composed poetry, mastered secular sciences, and delved into the complexes of Greek philosophy as interpreted by the Arabic scholars. The Rif seems to have devoted all of his time, talent, and energy to the study of the Talmud. It can perhaps be said the Rif's example set in motion in Spain a gradual shift in emphasis from other intellectual pursuits to a more intense and exclusive study of Jewish texts. In doing so, Sephardic Jewry noticeably shifted towards the views held by their French and German counterparts and created the climate for the subsequent acceptance of the school's authority in matters of Talmudic interpretation. This shift is evidenced by the works of the Ramban, the Rashba, the Ritva, and the Ran, and by the acceptance of the Rosh as the supreme halachic authority in some provinces of Spain. Before his death, the Rif appointed Rav Yosef ibn Migash as his successor, even though his own son Rav Yaakov was an accomplished Talmudic and halachic scholar. Now we're going to come to Rav Avraham ben Meir ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra. He was born in Spain in 1089 and died in 1164. Rav Avraham's early life was spent in Spain, mainly Cordova, where he devoted his time to studying Torah. He also acquired proficiency in science, philosophy, mathematics, astrology, and Hebrew grammar. Despite his extraordinary capabilities, the Ibn Ezra never succeeded in his various financial ventures and lived in poverty most of his life. His friendship with Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, the Ibn Ezra often quotes the latter in his commentary to the Torah, has given rise to many popular but undocumented stories. According to one of these, Rabbi Avraham was married to Rabbi Yehuda's daughter. Among the Ibn Ezra's misfortunes was the untimely death of his wife, who left him with a small son, Yitzchak, the other children having died in infancy. During the Almoravid uprising of 1135, Rabbi Avraham went into exile with his brothers. After an arduous journey, he arrived in Rome, where he began to compose his Torah commentary, beginning with Koheles. He actually wrote on the Tanakh. During the next 4 years, he moved from place to place in Italy, devoting himself to biblical exegesis, writing on most, if not all, Tanakh. Some of there existed in both lengthy and abridged versions. During the course of his wanderings, the Ibn Ezra's son Yitzchak had departed for Baghdad, where after a time he converted to the Muslim faith. Subsequently, he repented and returned to Judaism. In a poem which he composed to vindicate himself, Rabbi Yitzchak asserts that he never transgressed the Torah. He merely made an unwilling profession attesting to the prophethood of Muhammad. The Rambam in his Igros Hashmad rules that such a profession may be made under duress. A short time afterwards, Rabbi Yitzchak died. When Rabbi Avraham became aware of the events some 3 years later, he was stricken with unending grief because of the double tragedy, and from that time on he was unable to settle in a permanent home. From Italy he traveled to Provence and then on to northern France, where he spent several years. Wherever he journeyed, he was enthusiastically received, and the illustrious Tosfos of Rabbeinu Tam, which we'll talk about later on, accorded him great honor. He's mentioned in Tosfos in the Gemara Rosh Hashanah. In 1158, the Ibn Ezra traveled to London, where he composed Yisod Mora, explaining the reasons for the various commandments, and the Igaros HaShabbos, proving that Shabbos is to be observed from sundown Friday until nightfall Saturday, and not from dawn on Shabbos to Sunday morning, as implied by another commentator. The year 1160 found him once again in Narbonne province, but the place of his death and burial are uncertain. Among the guesses are in northern Spain, Rome, and London. Some say that Ibn Ezra traveled to the land of Eretz Yisrael, and his grave is next to Yehuda Levi's in the Upper Galilee. A colorful personality whose brilliance extended to almost every field of knowledge, Rabbi Avraham the Ibn Ezra was recognized in his youth as a Pietan of rare caliber. The Ravid calls him the last of the great men who formed the pride of Spanish Judaism and who strengthened Israel with songs and words of comfort. Of his poems, Rabbi Yehuda al-Kharizi states, they provide help in time of need and bring refreshing rain in time of drought. All of his hymns are lofty and admirable in their content. So greatly did the Chasam Sofer regard the Ibn Ezra's Zemr Tzemach Chama Nafshi that he sang it every fine evening upon arriving home from the shul service, even before reciting the Kiddush. The Ibn Ezra chose to interpret the Tanakh in their plainest meaning and not according to Haggadic ways, although his views with regard to the biblical interpretation are controversial. In defining the performance of the mitzvahs, he scrupulously and zealously adheres to the views of the sages of the Talmud and does not hesitate to reprimand anyone straying from his path. Even the most recognized scholar, his sharp wit and keen understanding of human nature are apparent in the many proverbs and riddles he uses to make his point. He has no patience for those who propose interpretations of Tanakh which he considers false. For such comments in their authors he had barbs and biting satire. Specially targeted for such treatment are the Quranic commentaries such as the Ben Zutum, whom the Ibn Ezra dubs as the one stricken with blindness. In one instance, the Chumash Mos, where Ben Zutum mistranslates if one man's ox shoves his fellow ox, instead of the correct if one man's ox shoves his fellow's ox, Rabbi Avraham makes short shrift of the karate, an ox has no fellow, save Ben Zutra himself. Due to its immense popularity, the Ibn Ezra's Torah commentary has been the object of more than 50 super commentaries, many of which exist only in manuscript. In addition, the Ibn Ezra is reputed to have written novellae on tractate Kedushin. He wrote many grammatical works, the most famous of which is Mosnayim, and he translated Rabbi Yehuda Ibn Chayuk's books on grammar to Hebrew. Ibn Ezra also wrote books on mathematics, astronomy, and astrology, one of the better known being the Sefer HaBur, written in 1874. Now we're going to talk about the Rambam's father, Rabbi Maimon ben Yosef HaDayan. Born in Spain in the late 11th century and died in Eretz Yisrael either 1165 or somewhere between 1165 and 1170. Rabbi Maimon is best known as the father of the Rambam, but he was a great scholar and leader in his own right. One of the leading students of the illustrious Rabbi Yosef ibn Migash, Rabbi Maimon became a dayan in Cordova following a generation's long family tradition. He was an accomplished Talmudist and teacher, as well as an astronomer, mathematician, and philosopher. The Rambam frequently quotes his father's Talmudic and halachic commentaries, and Rabbi Avraham ben HaRambam, which is the son of the Rambam, which we're going to talk about soon, quotes extensively from Maimon's Torah commentary. He also wrote on the laws of festivals, prayer, ritual purity, and many responses, as was customary in his time. His books were written in Arabic. Unfortunately, only a few fragments of his writings are extant. Among the teachings cited by the Rambam is Rabbi Maimon's family tradition regarding the value of a pruta, the smallest coin of Talmudic times. The exact value of the coin has halachic implications, and Rabbi Maimon's ruling has been accepted by the halacha to this day. The closing years of Rabbi Maimon's life were filled with suffering and tragedy, but he remained the source of courage and inspiration not only to his family but to many Jewish communities. The troubles began when the Almohads conquered Cordova in 1149. They forced the Jews under their sway to choose between conversion, death, and exile. Rabbi Maimon and his family left Cordova and began a long period of ruthless wandering in the face of hostility and persecution that lasted for the rest of his life. After perhaps 10 years of wandering in Spain, Rabbi Maimon took his family to Fez, Morocco, where they found an appalling situation. There, too, Jews were forbidden to practice Judaism publicly. What is more, there was a false Jewish Mashiach who was misleading the people. Rabbi Maimon forbade the people to heed the messianic blandishments of the impostors. The spiritual state of the Jews was depressed. However, for many of them had come to feel that Hashem had indeed abandoned Israel and chosen another nation in its place, Rabbi Maimon wrote the lengthy Geras HaNechama, Letter of Consolation in Arabic, strengthening the people's faith in Hashem and the eventual redemption and exhorting them to hold fast to the mitzvahs to whatever degree possible, even if they could bring themselves to do so only secretly. He compared the victims of Muslim persecution to a drowning man and the Torah to a rope from heaven. Whoever grasped it, even with his fingertips, had a hope of survival. Whoever let go would surely drown. After writing this defiant letter, Rabbi Maimon could no longer remain in Fez. With his family, he traveled to Eretz Yisrael, but the land had not recovered from the ravages of the Second Crusade. Life was poor and dangerous. Rabbi Maimon encouraged his family to go on to Mitzrayim. As for him, he was already an old man and chose to live out his remaining days in Eretz Yisrael. He died not long after, probably in Yerushalayim, although some say he is buried in Tveria near the Rambam. Now we're going to talk about Rabbi Avraham Ibn Daud, the Rivet. Born in Cordova, Spain in 1110 and died in Toledo, Spain in 1180. Author of the Sefer Kabbalah, a grandson of Rav Yitzchok Abalya, Rav Avraham studied under his uncle Rav Baruch Abalya. Although a proficient Talmudist, physician, and philosopher, the Rivet one is best known for his Sefer Kabbalah, in which he lists chronologically all important events and personalities from Adam until his own time. The book's division of Jewish history into periods of Zugos, Nisim, Tanoim, Amoraim, Rabbanim, Savurai, Gaonim, and Rabbanim became the norm for all future Jewish historic chronicles. Of special importance is his account of the Torah Renaissance, which took place in Spain in the two centuries preceding him. The two appendices, A History of the Roman Empire and A History of the Jewish Nation, during the period of the Second Beit Hamikdash, as adopted from Josephus, are of doubtful authorship. The purpose of Sefer Kabbalah was to refute Koraitic beliefs by delineating the unbroken chain of tradition from Moshe down to rabbinical authorities of his own day, thereby proving the authenticity of the oral law. Another work containing a polemic against the Karaites has been lost. His philosophical treatise, Amuna Rama, on the topics of free will, prophecy, and divine oneness and eternity, cites the Amunas Deus of Rav Sadia Gaon, and Bekor Chaim of Shlomo Ibn Gabriel harshly criticizes the latter. Rav Shlomo Ibn Labi translated the Amuna Rama from Arabic into Hebrew in Frankfurt in 1853. Rav Shmuel's Motod translation entitled Amunah Noseach exists in manuscript. Several other works of Rivet, including a treatise on astronomy, have not survived. He died as a martyr, hanged by the king of Toledo for refusing to leave the Jewish faith. Again, we're going to be talking about the Rambam, Rav Moshe Ben Maimon, who was born in Cordova, Spain in 1135, or in the Hebrew year 4895, died in Cairo, Egypt in 1204, or the Hebrew year was the 20th of Tevis, 4965. The Rambam's first teacher was his father, Rav Maimon, a disciple of the Reb Magash, as we just said, referred to by the Rambam as my teacher, Rav Yosef Halevi, and a dayan in the basin of Cordova alongside Rav Yosef Ibn Sadik. The family traced its ancestry through an illustrious chain of Torah luminaries stretching back to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, compiler of the Mishnah, and King David. The Rambam's signature at the end of his Mishnah commentary lists seven generations of forebearers, five bearing the title Dayan, one the title Chochem, and one Rav. The Rambam occasionally cites his father. An introduction to his Mishnah commentary writes, I have gathered all that has come to my hands from the commentaries of my master, my father of blessed memory, and others. A popular tradition relates that when Rav Migash lay fatally ill, Rav Maimon brought his son Moshe to his mentor's bedside for a blessing. Fully aware of their child's unusual qualities and potential, Rav Migash kissed the young Moshe and blessed him. Many years later, the Rambam reportedly ascribed all of his Torah wisdom to the venerable scholar's blessing. When the Rambam was only 13 years old, Kadover fell to the rule of the fanatical Almohad Mazem sect, which forced the Jewish population to choose between Islam and exile. Rav Maimon and his entire family left for Christian Spain, where they wandered from place to place for almost 12 years. They then emigrated to Fez in Morocco, the residence of many Jews who had been forcibly converted to Islam. Since anyone caught there observing Judaism was sentenced to death, they left for Israel at the earliest opportunity. At that time, the Holy Land, still torn by the Crusades, was not safe for Jews. In 1165, they finally settled in Cairo in Egypt, which afforded asylum and religious freedom to oppressed Jews. There, the Rambam flourished and became, in Meiri's play and the wording of Tehillim, the beauty of Noph, Egypt, joy of all the earth. Despite his wanderings, at the age of 23, the Rambam began writing a Mishnah commentary, Sefer Hamor, popularly known as Perisham Mishnayos. As he said in his afterwards, he wrote under extreme difficulty during the divinely decreed exile, which caused us to wander among the lands from one end of the heavens to the other, some of it written while traveling over land, some on board ship. This work thoroughly analyzes the various opinions mentioned in each Mishnah. He embellishes this commentary with valuable introductions which clarify some basic fundamentals of the Jewish faith and trace the chain of transmission of the oral law. A philosophical analysis in the introduction to Tractate Ovos is popularly known as Shmona Perukim. This work discusses the nature of the soul, its afflictions and their cures, man's purpose in the world, prophecy and the problem of free will versus divine omniscience. Even in the commentary proper, the Rambam sometimes delves into the tenets of Judaism. In his commentary to Sanhedrin on the Pasuk, all of Israel has, in the Mishnah actually, all of Israel has a portion of the world to come, he outlines the differing views as to the nature of the divine scheme for reward and punishment, presents the correct approach, and discusses the need for reward. In the tangible discussion, he sets forth his opinion that the Agudah, specifically that relating to the ultimate reward and punishment, must generally be interpreted allegorically. He argues that human language cannot describe what has not been experienced. We lack terms that are adequate to describe the joys and pains of the world to come. Consequently, the sages describe the world to come by means of allegories taken from life on earth. Nevertheless, the Garden of Eden is a lush and fertile area on this globe. The Rambam describes the resurrection of the dead and the days of Mashiach, but avers that the ultimate reward is not intended to be dispensed in the latter two eras, but in the spiritual world to come. This view, which is reiterated in his code, later created a great furor among Jewish thinkers and induced Rav Meir Abulafia to fight an ideological war against the Rambam. Finally, the Rambam outlines his famous 13 fundamental tenets of Judaism. A whole literature has sprung up around the Rambam's classification of these tenets as fundamentals. Rabbi Yosef Albo in his Ikorim is one of the many who disputes the Rambam's view. Rav Yitzchok Abarbanel devoted an entire sefer called Rosh Hashanah into defending the Rambam. These fundamentals were set in prose as the Ani Maamin recited by many Jews every day, and in poetry as the popular Haim Yigdal, which prefaces the daily morning prayer service. Clearly, the multitudes of Israel have decided for the Rambam. The commentary to Mishnah, which took 7 years to complete, was written in Arabic. The translation into Hebrew was done piecemeal, having been started by Rabbi Yehuda al-Kharizi and continued by various others. First printed in 1492 in Naples, Italy, this work has recently been retranslated from the Arabic by Rabbi Yosef Kalfich in Shalim in 1964. During his early years in Egypt, the Rambam experienced many misfortunes. His father, Rabbi Maimon, died, leaving his youngest son, David, to support the family by trading in gems, while the Rambam devoted his entire time to study. However, David, and with him, the family fortune perished when his ship sank in the Indian Ocean. Devastated by the loss of David, the Rambam succumbed to a protracted illness. Upon recovering, he was faced with the responsibility of supporting both his own family and his brothers. Opposed to earning a livelihood through the rabbinate, the Rambam became a doctor. His medical reputation grew, and the Sultan Saladin appointed him doctor to the royal court. The Rambam composed many treatises on medicine, and his fame brought so many patients to his door that his professional duties occupied most of his day and sometimes part of his night. Nevertheless, the Rambam found time to write and to manage the religious affairs of the Cairo community. As physician to the royal court, the Rambam used his influence for the welfare of his brethren. He was named Nagid, Prince of Egyptian Jewry, a title held by his son Rabbi Avraham, and five generations of the Rambam's descendants. The Nagid appointed the Dayanim for all Egyptian communities and arbitrated all disagreements arising between the Dayanim and their flocks. In about 1170, the Rambam began his monumental Mishneh Torah, a comprehensive halachic compendium derived from the Talmud and the works of the Gaonim. The work comprises 14 books, and therefore its popular title, Yad Chazok, a mighty hand, the word Yad, hand, having the numerical value of 14, each arranged systematically according to topics. The work, which took 10 years to write, was unique in this format as well as its content. Unlike his predecessors, who discussed only halachic topics relevant to the time of the exile, the Rambam included laws pertaining to Israel in the temple era, such as sacrifices, contamination, and purity. The Mishneh Torah is concisely written in pure, lucid Hebrew. However, in its concern for brevity, the Rambam omitted the source of each decision, and thereby evoked much criticism, since it was almost impossible to verify the halachic decisions. The Rambam himself later regretted that he had not composed a separate work citing the source of each decision, and resolved to do so, but unfortunately never had time to write it. The Mishneh Torah immediately gained extraordinary popularity, and even the Rivet number 3, who composed critical notes, Hasogas HaRivet, printed alongside the text in most editions, acknowledged that the work was a magnificent contribution. The scholars of Lunel province, known for their sharp thinking and studying of the Torah, also studied the code zealously and addressed their questions to the Rambam himself, who replied to their satisfaction. The Mishneh Torah became a pillar of halacha, and over 325 commentaries were written on it. Some of the most famous are Magid Mishneh, Kesef Mishneh, Lecha Mishneh, Mishneh Lamelech, Hagos, Maimonides, Rekeves HaMishneh, and Or Sameach. Most of the responses in Talmudic Navalei written through the centuries discuss relevant rulings in the Mishneh Torah. Another work called Sefer HaMitzvahs, composed in Arabic, traces the 613 Torah mitzvahs. Since many differing views existed as to which of the mitzvahs were to be counted among the 613, the Rambam set down principles clarifying the matter. This book, which was intended as an independent prologue to Mishneh Torah, also inspired a host of commentaries, among them Hasogas HaRamban and Rav Yitzchok Leon Ibn Tzur's Megillas Esther. The Mora Nevuchim Geifer perplexed the Rambam's philosophical treatise was written in Arabic about in the year 1185 and translated in Hebrew by Reb Shmuel Ibn Tibon. The purpose of this work was to guide persons who, having studied philosophy, were perplexed by seeming contradictions between the teaching of the Torah and the philosophical theory. The Rambam demonstrates that there is no contradiction between the two, and that all difficulties arise from the misinterpretation of the true fundamentals of either and from the false conclusions drawn from them. Although this work was written when the Rambam was about 50 years old, he had already envisioned such a volume more than two decades earlier. A major part of Mora Nevuchim dispels the anthropomorphic notions that Hashem is corporal, or that he has such human attributes as wrath, jealousy, etc. Indeed, the Rambam holds the incorporability of Hashem to be so central to Judaism that to think otherwise is heretical. In the first section of the Mora, the Rambam explains that such scriptural terms as eyes or hand of God are used figuratively and explains their true definitions. He goes on to a related subject, the uniqueness and absoluteness of Hashem's unity. The Rambam argues that the Torah's multiplicity of names to designate the Hashem's name does not suggest that he is multiple or changing. Rather, they describe how Hashem appears to man. When we perceive his deeds as compassionate, we describe him as the compassionate one, although it is only our perception of him, not he, that has changed. Then the Rambam proves Hashem's existence and that he is the creator of the universe. The Rambam goes on to explain prophecy in its varying degrees, revelation, and the balance between Hashem's oneness and man's free will. The Rambam's view, like that of his predecessors Rabbeinu Bechaya, from who wrote the Chovos HaLevavos, and of Sadia Gaon, was that the quest for a rational understanding of Hashem and His creation is a divine mitzvah that is incumbent upon everyone who is intellectually capable of it. Thus, in the Rambam's view, Mora Nevuchim was not an exercise in secular studies, but the most exalted brand of study enjoined by the Torah, delving into the secrets of the deity and his creation. Although the book was not meant for scholars educated exclusively in Torah, it sparked a confrontation on the rabbinical scene. Reb Shlomo of Montpellier fought bitterly against the study of philosophy in general and the Mora Nevuchim in particular, and he was joined by many other scholars. The polemic was renewed more than 50 years later by Reb Shlomo Petit. Despite the bitterness of the controversy, the Rambam has remained a preeminent figure in Jewish thought, no matter what the school. During a period of religious persecution and the rise of a false Mashiach in the Jewish community of Yemen, the Rambam wrote a letter of encouragement called the Igeres Taman, which greatly inspired the masses and kept them from forsaking their faith. So indebted did the Yemenite community feel to the Rambam for an inspiration of his letter that during the Rambam's lifetime, their version of the Kaddish prayer included, "During your lifetime and during your days and during the lifetime of Rav Moshe ben Maimon." Some of the other works of the Rambam include Maimon Tchias HaMeisim, which was published in 1569 on the resurrection of the dead, Milos HaGion, published in 1552, and Terminology of Logic, and Responsa in 1536, which were republished with addenda as Pe'er Hador in 1765, and as Tshuvas HaRambam in Yerushalayim in 1934, and again in 1958-61, and the Talmud commentary mentioned in the Mishnah commentary, but extant only on Masechet Rosh Hashanah, published in Paris in 1865, fragments of the Rambam's digest of the halachic material found in Yerushalayim Shalmi Talmud, written in the same style as the Rif's halachic digest of the Babylonian Talmud, have been published in New York in 1948. The Rambam's reputation as a brilliant physician was widespread in the Orient, and he is frequently quoted in the medical literature of his day. Some of his medical treatises have been recently translated into Hebrew. When the Rambam died, both Jews and non-Jews of Cairo officially mourned him, and in Yerushalayim a fast was decreed. The Rambam's body was taken to Tiberium, and his tomb is a place of pilgrimage to this day. The Rambam's greatness is expressed in the popular maxim inscribed on his tomb, from Moshe, so Moshe, referring to the Rambam, none arose like Moshe. That is written on his monument. By the way, all the stuff that we're saying on this shiur is from a sefer called the Rishonim, published by Art Scroll. Now we're going to talk about the Rambam's son, Rav Avraham ben Rambam, born in Egypt in 1186 and died in Cairo, Egypt in 1237. The Rambam personally instructed his only son, named for the patriarch Avraham, and divulged to him many new insights which he had not recorded in his works. At the age of 19, Rav Avraham, who had been born in his father's 51st year, succeeded his father as personal physician to the Sultan and his royal court, and assumed leadership of Egyptian Jewry as the Nagid, which we mentioned before. Five generations were called the Nagidi position, which placed all Jewish courts under his jurisdiction and made him responsible for appointing suitable rabbis and dayanim. The new Nagid enacted major improvements in communal affairs. He halted the common practice of bans of excommunication and counterbans being pronounced by every minor functionary against his of introspective solitude. In this section on Bitochon, trust in Hashem, he anticipates that thought enunciated by many later thinkers, that the degree of trust one must have depends upon the spiritual level of the individual and his closeness to Hashem. With practical examples, he demonstrates how this trust should be used to guide the true believer's actions. The remaining fragments of this work have been translated from the original Arabic into English. The Highways to Perfection of Avraham Maimonides, published in New York in 1927, again in Baltimore in 1938, and in Hebrew in 1973 in Yerushalayim. In his Torah commentary, which only the books of Chumash Bereishis and Shmos have survived, published in London in 1958, Rav Avraham stresses the plain meaning and disregards homiletic interpretations. His commentary preserves gems from his father, the Rambam, and grandfather of Maimon, besides scores of quotations from the works of the Gaonim, Rav Sadia, Rav Shmuel ben Chofni, and others. An essay and approach to the Agudah, known as the Maimer al Darushas, attributed to Rav Avraham, has been printed many times. Rav Avraham also began a commentary to Mishnah Torah, which would cite the source for each decision, and a similar commentary to Moreh Nevuchim,
but unfortunately died before he was able to complete them. He was succeeded as Noged by his son, Reb David. Now we're going to talk about the Rambana, Rav Moshe ben Nachman, who was born in Spain in 1194 and died in Eretz Yisrael in 1270. Scion of a prominent rabbinical family and a relative of Rav Yonah Gurandi, the Ramban was a disciple of Rav Yehuda ben Yochur and Rav Nosson ben Meir of Twinkertail, and received Kabbalistic instruction from Be'ezra and Rav Israel, both of Gerona. He also studied medicine, which later became his profession. At the age of 15, the Ramban compiled Hilchos Nedorim and Hilchos Bechoros in the style of the Rif's Sefer Halachas, because the Rif had omitted these two Mesechtas from his code. Most of the Ramban's life was spent in Gerona, disseminating Torah to his many disciples. He was acknowledged as the foremost halachic authority in all of Spain, and his decisions were respected in other countries as well. In 1238, the Ramban was called upon to voice his opinion concerning the great controversy regarding the Rambam's works. In response, he praised the scholarship of Reb Shlomo of Montpellier, who headed the opposition to the Rambam, and severely chastised all who would insult this great Talmudist for his zeal. At the same time, the Ramban also sought to still the vehemence of the Rambam's opponents by pointing out that Mishneh Torah shows no leniency in interpreting halacha, and it's sometimes quite strict. As to the Sefer Mor and the Vuchim, the Ramban explained that it was not intended for public use, but only for those who had been led astray by philosophy. He also pointed out that while Mor and the Vuchim might be unnecessary and even injurious to the Jews of France and Germany, it was a vital necessity to the philosophically oriented Sephardic community of Spain. Accordingly, he besieged the Pragmleders of the band to revoke it, permitting the study of the Mor and Nevuchim and the philosophical sections of Sefer Hamada in the Mishneh Torah. However, the Ramban agreed that public study groups of the Mor should be discouraged, for even the Rambam had branded such dissemination of what he considered the secrets of the Torah as unworthy and sacrilegious. The Ramban's great respect for Torah scholars of earlier periods led to the writing of Asagas HaRamban, in which he defends Sefer Halachas Gedolos Bahag, a work of the Geunic era, against the criticism expressed by the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvahs. In his popular work Melchemes Hashem, the Ramban defends the decisions of the Rif against the refutations of the Raza in his Sefer HaMor and in Sefer HaZuchus. He defends the Rif against the Ravid. The Ramban, however, does not blindly accept the Rif's rulings. On occasion, when unable to reconcile the rulings laid down by the Rif with his own Talmudic interpretation, he adopts his own halachic decision. In most cases, however, the Ramban subscribes to the Rif's ruling, even against the prevalent custom, as in prohibiting the use of wax candles for the Shabbos and insisting only on oil. The Ramban also wrote Chidushim on most of the Talmud in the style of the Tosfos. His other works include Torah Sa'odom, a compendium of laws of mourning, climaxing with Shar HaGemul, a treatise discussing reward and punishment and the resurrection of the dead, Igeres HaKodesh on the sanctity and significance of marriage, Igeres HaMusa, an ethical obstacle addressed to his son, Sefer HaGeula on the coming of the Mashiach, a commentary on Iyov, Mishpat HaChayrem on the laws of excommunication, which was printed in Kolbo, Hilchos Bedika on laws of governing the examination of the animal's lungs after ritual slaughter, cited by the Rashbads, Hilchos Chala, printed with Hilchos Bechoros, and Hilchos Nida, printed with his Chadushim to Masechta Nida, a Kabbalistic treatise, Hamuna Vehabi Tochan, published in Venice in 5661, is ascribed to him, but it is disputed. In 1263, the Ramban was ordered by King James of Aragon to hold a religious disputation with a Jewish apostate, Pablo Christianity, at Barcelona. The king and his court, including many dignitaries of the church, were present at this dispute. The victorious Ramban was rewarded by James with a gift of 300 coins. The fanatical Dominicans, however, began spreading the rumor that their side had won the debate. The Ramban responded by publishing an exact account of the questions and answers used in disputation under the title Sefer HaVikuach. The Dominicans presented selected passages from this treatise to the king, charging that they were blasphemies against Christianity. The Ramban admitted the charge, but contended that he only had written what he said during the disputation in the presence of the king, who had granted him freedom of speech. Nevertheless, Sefer HaVikuach was condemned to be burned, and the Ramban was expelled from Aragon. For 3 years, the Ramban sojourned in Castile or Provence, where he began writing his monumental Torah commentary, unique in that it not only interprets the verses, but also analyzes the topics, presenting them in a Torah perspective, intermingled with Agadic and Kabbalistic interpretations. Our careful examinations of other commentaries, especially the Rambam and the Ibn Ezra, whom the Ramban severely criticizes for an over-rational approach which, in his opinion, deviated from the true Talmudic and Kabbalistic interpretations. The Ramban also frequently disagrees with Rashi's rendering and such latter authors as the Mizrahi and the Maral wrote rebuttals defending Rashi. The great Kabbalist Arizal testified to the depth and reliability of the mystical portion of the Ramban's commentary and considered the Ramban the last of the ancient Kabbalistic school who received direct transmission of the mystical secrets that were later concealed. Many super commentaries were written on the Ramban's Torah commentary, among them Me'eres Enayim and Keser Shem Tov. At the age of 72, the Ramban decided to settle in Eretz Yisrael. Before departing, he gave a dissertation on Sefer Keheles, lauding the Holy Land and the precept of charity. After a difficult journey and much suffering, the Ramban arrived in Akko in Elul 1267. He spent Rosh Hashanah Yerushalayim, which was in deplorable condition as a result of the havoc wrought by the Crusaders. The Ramban designated a desolate house as a shul and brought in a Sefer Torah from Shechem. In this shul he gave a drasha on the laws of shofar and exhorted the inhabitants of Israel to be exceedingly careful that their actions be righteous, for they are like servants in the king's palace. With the Ramban's help, the Jewish community in Shlaim, which had all but ceased to exist, began its revival. The Ramban himself settled in Akko, a Torah center at the time, and gathered about him a circle of pupils. Here he completed the last of his works, the Torah commentary, a commentary on all the parshas. He kept in close contact with his family in Spain, telling them of the conditions in the Holy Land and admonishing them to ethical behavior and fear of Hashem. Various opinions placed the Ramban's burial site at Hebron near the cave of Machpelah, either or Haifa or Akko or Yerushalayim. He was greatly revered by all succeeding generations, and the Rivash writes of him, all of his words are like sparks of fire, and the entire communities of Castile rely upon his halachic ruling as if given directly from Hashem to Moshe. Now we're going to talk about the Rashba, and his name was Rav Shlomo ben Avraham ibn Aderes. And he was born in Barcelona, Spain in 1235, and he died in Barcelona, Spain in 1310. The Rashba studied under Rav Yona Gurondi and the Ramban. After spending a few years as a financier, he was called upon by the Barcelona community to serve as their Rav, their rabbi, a position he held for more than 40 years until his death. Inquiries were sent to the Rashba from Eretz Israel, Italy, Portugal, France, Germany, North Africa, and of course from all parts of Spain. His response to perhaps the most extensive of the early authorities are concise and to the point. They cover all topics of Judaism, including explanations of difficult passages in the Torah, Agoda, and Talmud. These responses have been frequently cited in later authoritative works, including the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch, and weigh heavily in the final halachic decision. They were collected in many different codices. 8 different collections of his responses have been printed. The section known as Volume 1 contains 1,255 responses and was initially printed in Bologna in 1539. The complete collection comprises well over 3,000 responsum, but according to the Ginas Veradim, this collection itself is only in the bridged form of the original. The volume of responsum attributed to the Ramban is mostly by the Rashba. It should be noted, however, that interspersed among the thousands of responsum in these volumes are decisions written by other sages, such as Rav Meir of Rottenburg, which we will learn about in the Rishonim Shir number 2. The leader of all Spanish Jewry, Rashba, was acknowledged as the foremost halachic authority of his generation by almost all of the world's Jewish communities. His penetrating Talmud commentary appearing on 17 Masechtos is no doubt a result of the discourses he delivered in the yeshiva he headed. His novelae, which followed the Tosfos method of study, are very popular and a basic text for any serious Talmud student. The novelae to Ksuvos appearing under his name belong to the Ramban and are so cited in Shita Mekubetzes. The Rashba's own novelae to that tractate have been published recently in Yerushalayim in 1973 from his manuscript. Similarly, the Ritva's novelae to tractate Sukkah have erroneously been attributed to the Rashba. His novelae to Bava Metzia and Bava Basra and his complete work on tractate Nida have been published in modern times. The Rashba exerted an overpowering influence on all matters pertaining to the Jewish communities of even far-off lands, and his opinion was sought on all major issues. During the controversy over the Rambam's Mora, the Rashba upheld the Rambam's honor in response to Rav Shlomo's petite polemic against it. However, although not an opponent of philosophy itself, the Rashba nevertheless feared that preoccupation with the subject would result in neglect of Torah study and might lead some to deviate from the true interpretation of the Agoda, which must conform to the Ashkofer perspective of the Torah. For this reason, he was steadfastly opposed to the philosophic rationalistic concept of Judaism that then prevailed in some parts of Spain and province. In 1305, together with his based in Barcelona, he pronounced a ban of excommunication over all who studied philosophy and the sciences before reaching the age of 25. The works of the Rambam, however, were excluded from the ban, as was the study of medicine for professional purposes. A special ban was pronounced against the rationalistic Bible exegetes and those who interpreted the Agoda in a philosophical manner. For example, claiming that the 12 tribes only represented the signs of the zodiac. Reb Yidya HaPenini wrote an apologetic letter to the Rashba imploring him to lift his ban. The entire series of bans, counterbans, and excommunications revolving around the Rambam's works and the study of secular disciplines were subsequently collected and published under the title Minchas Kenoos. Another problem which the Rashba had to contend with was the rising influence of Reb Avraham Abluflei, who, claiming to be informed through the study of Kabbalah, predicted the imminent coming of Mashiach. The community of Messina, Italy, where the Abul Fayyam was preaching, asked the Rashba whether to follow him or not. The Rashba opposed Abul Fayyam and his followers. A Kabbalist himself, the Rashba condemned Ablufia's interpretations of Kabbalistic doctrine. The Rashba had a good part of the Rambam's Mishnah commentary translated into Hebrew from the original Arabic. He also carried on a disputation with a noted Christian scholar and wrote a refutation of the charges of Raymond Martini, a Dominican monk of Barcelona who had issued a work misinterpreting passages from the Gemara and the Medrash. The Rashba also composed a treatise to refute the charges of a Muslim scholar of an earlier generation. His other works include Torah Sabayis on Dietary Laws, published in Venice in 1608, including a synopsis, Torah Sabayis HaKotzer, printed in 1566, a previously lost chapter of the work Shar HaMayim, dealing with the laws of the Mikveh, was recently published in Budapest in 1933. When Nabar and Alevi composed Vedic Habayis, refuting many of the Rashba's decisions, an anonymous work, Mishmeres Habayis, appeared defending the original. In one of his responses, Rashba reveals himself as the author of this volume. He also composed Avodas HaKodesh concerning the laws of the Shabbos and the Yom Tovim, published in Venice in 1602. Piskei Challah, published in Constantinople in 1518, on laws pertaining to the separation of dough, and a Kabbalistic commentary on the Agada, quoted frequently by the Kosev in Ein Yaakov and recently printed in Yerushalayim in 1976. Among his prominent disciples were the Ritvor, Rav Shem Tov Ibn Gaon, and Rav Chaya Ben Osher. Now we will talk about Rav Nissen Ben Reuven, known as the Ran. He was born in Spain in 1290 and died in Barcelona, Spain in 1375. As the rabbi of Barcelona, Ran was for a time imprisoned by the government together with other communal figures on false charges and later released unharmed. The foremost rabbinical authority of his time, Rav Nissen, received inquiries from France, Italy, Africa, and even Eretz Israel. However, only 77 of his responses have been preserved and published in Rome in 1545. The Ran is famous for his extensive commentary on the Rif's Sefer Halachas, which is published together with the Code on many tractates. An independent thinker, he does not hesitate to differ with early authorities. Among his commentaries on many Talmudic tractates, the one on the Dorim appears in the Talmud folio in all of the standard editions. The Ran's commentaries to other Masechtas of the Talmud have appeared in print at various times and have recently been collected and published as Chedushei HaRan al HaShas. Some of these works have, however, been erroneously identified. The work to Masechta Shabbos is probably by a disciple of the Ran, whereas the commentary known as Chedushei HaRitvah was really written by the Ran. The work on tractate Megillah was not by him, but is probably by an earlier scholar. Rav Elchanan Wasserman Zatzal maintained that the commentary on Sanhedrin is not by the Ran. The Ran's commentaries to Pesachim, Moed Katan, and Baba Basra have recently surfaced. A commentary to Ksuvos entitled Shita LaRan has been published, but its authorship by the Ran is not certain. Rav Nissen, following the footsteps of previous generations of Sephardic Talmud scholars, example the Rambam, also left his mark in the field of Jewish thought. We're talking about the Ran. His collection of homilies, known as the Rosh's HaRan, is a classic exposition of the fundamentals of the Jewish religion. It has been conclusively proven and published in Yerushalayim in 5634 that the Ran is the true author of this work and not a disciple of the Ramban with the same name as was once supposed. Though these homilies are presented as commentaries to specific passages of the Torah, their main purpose is to explain and illuminate the tenets of the faith. Here the Ran synthesizes the approaches of the Rambam, the Ramban, the Ralbag, and other great thinkers. In many instances, he offers his original approach to profound questions. Many giants of Jewish thought after the Ran, such as Rabbi Chisdei Kreskis, Rabbi Yosef Albo, Rabbi Yitzchok Abarbanel, Rabbi Yitzchok Arama, used his drushes as the basis for their own philosophical systems. The Ran refrained from involvement in the study of Kabbalah, and even disapproved of the Ramban's preoccupation with the mystical lore, which he described as excessive. At an advanced age, the Ran began writing his Torah commentary, which presents a rational explanation combining the plain meaning with Talmudic elaboration. Unfortunately, he died before completing the work. The part he did write has recently been published in Yerushalayim in 5728. He also composed liturgical hymns. The Ran studied under his father and possibly under the Rashba. He was a colleague of Rabbi Vital of Tolosa and Rabbi Peretz HaKohen. Among his notable disciples were the Rivash, Rabbi Yosef of Saragossa, Rabbi Chistoy Kreskes, number 2, Rabbi Vital Ephraim Gurandi, and Rabbi Yosef Chaviva, author of Nemuke Yosef. The Ran had two sons who were scholars, Rabbi Chistoy and Rabbi Ruven. About the latter, Rivish wrote, "Fruit of the righteous, the wise son, Rabbi Ruven." We will conclude our shiur on part number 1 of the Rishonim now, but we will continue Mir Tashem with part 2 of the Rishonim at a later time.